Good morning. Today is Friday, September the 11th. It would be a significant day anyway, but with the fires and stuff, talk about great timing. Well, probably better timing for Chief Sean. We got Assistant Chief Bill with us this morning. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Good to see anybody with the smoke that's laying
sure
down,
enough.
Huh? Yeah. Oh, boy. So we've got all kinds of stuff to talk about, obviously. 9/11, the 19th anniversary. Yeah, we could talk about that. We got stuff in the air that we can talk about, stuff on the ground that we can talk about, and where some of our folks from Humble Bay Fire are being deployed.
Yes.
And CAL FIRE and all the other folks, too. So this is going to be a rocking show once we get it rolling. Winston.
What is the reason a taxi is called that?
Well, let's see. It's a verb for airplanes. What would it tax? Taxi.
My guess would be something to do with the money you pay to ride in a taxi is like a transportation tax at the time. I don't know.
Oh, like a tax collector?
Yeah.
I'm going to think that it's a shortened phrase of a word. I don't know what the word would be. Taxidermy. Yes. It's a shortened term for taxidermy.
Assistant Chief Bill was closer. The word originally referred to the meter carried by the cab. It was called a taximeter because it measured the fare or tax, and cabs equipped with them proudly boasted of the fact by painting taximeter on their doors. This was soon shortened to taxi, and in time, all cabs are called that.
I couldn't spell that big, long word.
That's my one for the day. I never get those. So.
Hey, congratulations, man. Let's start out with the stupid, and then we'll build into the other. Fireworks? Are you kidding me that somebody in Arcata was lighting fireworks off this week?
You know, I am so over fireworks right now. You know, I've never been a big fireworks guy anyways. And, but the 4th of July, it's a great holiday, you know, for all that it stands for. But I just don't understand the attractiveness of fireworks. I never have. The danger to me has always outweighed the pleasure somebody's going to get out of watching something go boom or make pretty colors.
Oh, they are pretty, certainly.
Absolutely.
But you grew up in a fire household, too.
True enough.
That's, you know, your jaundice coming in.
A little bit.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, is it legal for somebody to set off fireworks any time during the year?
Safe and sane firework, absolutely. In the state of California, if the rule of thumb is if it goes up or if it goes boom, it is illegal.
Oh, even if it goes boom?
Yes. You know, the M80s and things that blow up are completely illegal. Same with Oregon. The problem we have, though, is you can go online in 5 minutes and find a fireworks superstore in Nevada. Now, there's places in Nevada that they are illegal. Las Vegas City proper, they're illegal. However, in some of the outlying areas, you can go and you can buy the Blow S Up pack at a
oh really they have it
for $300, and they have stuff that has mortars,
stuff that goes up
and goes boom, and it's and you drive across the border, they don't check to see where you're from, you buy those fireworks, and that's part of the problem we have is they're accessible in other states around us, and it's makes it difficult on us and law enforcement to be able to stem that problem.
Yeah, well, they're more worried about something in your apple.
Right, exactly.
Or something in the
trunk. They ask if you have any fruit or anything like that, but I've never been asked coming across the border if I have any illegal fireworks.
Of course, that would be headlines if you had.
Right.
So it's legal to fire, to shoot them off. It's stupid to do it this time with the stuff going on.
If they're safe and sane left over from the 4th of July, provided you're being safe with them. Now, you can even make the safe and sane illegal by doing it in a unsafe manner.
A grass field.
Grass field, or if it's disturbing your neighbors, obviously. If it's going off and it's the Piccolo Pete that's whistling and being really loud, obviously they'll call law enforcement on you and they'll ask you to please stop.
Right.
But you can take anything that's legal and make it illegal by doing something stupid.
Yeah, I'm sure potato chips in a certain application could be considered illegal also. For those folks that are listening that aren't in the Eureka area, we seem to have, I'll just say periodically, weekly maybe, some big booms. Those all can't be transformers exploding throughout town.
Right.
Is that somebody in the middle of town lighting these things off?
You know, that's the million-dollar question. In my neighborhood, we've had it close enough to my house that it's rattled the windows and made my dogs dive for the bomb shelter. And I don't know the answer to that. whether it's fireworks, whether it's somebody that has some sort of access to something that is a bigger boom, I really don't know. But what I would say is if you're a neighbor of that person and you see them doing it, or, you know, I know it's hard. A lot of people don't want to turn in their neighbors, but we're never going to get through this problem unless we get help and people report these things and let us know where they're happening. And the problem is also the transitory issue is where it seems like one area will get hit with a lot of booms and then they move across town. And so I'm not sure what's going on.
Could be a pickup truck or something.
Who knows?
Not a black one. Relax. Oh, yeah. Some of that stuff is just, I don't know. You know, all the prevention, all the education you guys do, there still seem to be those that either ignore or it slips through.
Right. Yeah. And it's you know, and there's a lot of talk about rights and things like that, and people want to be able to celebrate the 4th of July and whatnot. But and I have zero issue with that, obviously, but just do it legally. And if you need to do fireworks, do the Safe and Sane or go to the big fireworks show if they have it. Obviously, this year people were starved for entertainment because we were in the middle of lockdown at that point. But there's still no excuse to do the illegal stuff and put your neighbors at risk.
That reveal party thing that started that one big fire down south, what was it? I mean, I think everybody knows that it was a reveal party, but what was the, I mean, you can do that with balloons and not have a big deal.
Right.
Or with water or, but this, what was it?
Well, the video that I saw was some sort of I don't want to say it's an incendiary device because that implies it's made to start a fire, but it basically was some device that they lit that blew smoke. I guess they were revealing they were having a baby boy. But with that comes an associated heat, and they, again, humans being humans, didn't think about the clearance from vegetation, and it was close enough that the amount of heat that it generated set the fire, and it was off to the races at that point over something that should be a happy occasion that could be done a whole lot of different ways. That was not the brightest move, obviously.
You know, I mentioned it to a couple of folks yesterday. I remember Arnie Millsap. He would always talk about stupid in public. And it's like, yeah, really? Oh, well. Everybody has their challenges. So
I guess
it's just
so.
More visible to see. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long, on 980 AM. We are Easy Radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy Radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Billy Reynolds from Humboldt Bay Fire. Fire.
That's the big topic these days.
Yeah, I mean, we got Southern Humboldt, we've got it Eastern Del Norte, we've got it Eastern Humboldt, Western Trinity. Pretty much, you know, that whole concept of being an island takes on a different definition for us right now. What are you guys able to do anything? I mean, there's really nothing you can respond to. But are you doing anything?
Yeah, I mean, it's wildland firefighting is a tough discipline because, you know, a lot of times you're at the mercy of the fuel, the weather, and the topography of the things that are burning. And, you know, you can take direct action to protect structures and things like that. But generally what you see, the most effective thing is that indirect attack where they cut fire line, you let the fire burn to a certain point, and they can stop it there. But again, a lot of that is, again, going back to the fuel, weather, and topography, you know, what's burning, what's the weather doing, and what's the type of land it's on. The big one of the three, though, is the weather. And that's the thing that's really going to have to help us out in this case, because resources are spread pretty thin, and everybody's screaming for help, but there's not a lot of help out there because everybody's got, if you look at the entire state map, the fires up and down the state are just insane right now.
There's a fella in Southern California I was talking to. He said, have you looked at the map of California? It looks like an ashtray. I thought, you know, that's probably a pretty good analogy of what's going on. And Oregon's in the same boat, too.
You
got some buddies in Roseburg and Portland, and they're dealing with evacuations in their neighborhoods, not literally in their neighborhoods, but in their region also.
Yeah.
How much does humidity impact this. I mean, it certainly feels damper today than it did yesterday, and yesterday more humid than the day before. Does that really influence this stuff to a significant extent?
It absolutely does. That's one of the biggest weather readings that we get is the relative humidity when we go to these fires, because that tells you a bunch of things about the fuel moisture, and it also affects the fire activity. The wetter and damper that it is, obviously, you don't see that extreme fire behavior that you normally would when on the hot and windy days. So we're keeping our fingers crossed. I know that next week they're saying that there's some rain expected in some of the regions. No lightning.
Okay, good.
But not that I'm aware of anyways. But we're all keeping our fingers crossed for the rain, because a lot of times these fires are big enough that that's going to be our biggest savior, is getting that rain on them.
Well, and we're hearing some of the airplanes, the big boy planes with the fire retardant can't see where to put it, so they're not up able to put anything down because they don't want to miss.
And the aircraft are one of our biggest tools, but like everybody saw a couple of days ago with the way the smoke was here and everything, even just the day-to-day stuff. A good friend of mine is a lieutenant for CHP, and he runs air operations out of Napa, and I asked him how it was going. Pardon my voice there. And he said, we're grounded. We can't do anything right now. And
I've heard Napa is Vallejo. I mean, right. That's certainly what we've been hearing a lot on the national press, is makes us look like we're just a starter kit.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's definitely a big concern, because, we want the planes to be able to fly and the helicopters to be able to fly. But if they can't do it safely, we're putting undue risk on the people. So that puts us at a disadvantage.
Taking a look at some of that type of stuff, though, Bill, if we have 5-mile-an-hour, 10-mile-an-hour breezes coming off the ocean, is that enough to push this back onto itself so that it kind of is burning over the burned areas already and kind of starts to, I'm thinking more of a wonton here, fold back on top of itself and can kind of almost develop its own fire line?
It does definitely helps out a lot. It helps with different tactics that we're able to do. You've heard of backfiring, where we actually will burn out strips of fuel to be able to get rid of that fuel. And the weather conditions have to be right for that. We just, obviously there's a whole lot of science that goes into, we don't just go starting fires at random. Basically, we want to find the right point to do it, have the right weather conditions to be able to do it. And even if the wind is seemingly small in the opposite direction, that does help slow things down, where maybe we can get out in front of it and even cut fire line ahead of it. So every little bit helps. Obviously, the rain's going to be the big thing, and the humidity is the big thing. The more of that we get, the easier it's going to be on our folks out there doing the work. And the temperature is too, because as the temperature goes up, the humidity goes down and dries things out. So
fire lines are kind of a science unto themselves. I mean, if the highway isn't wide enough for it to keep it from jumping in Willits or Gasky, you don't hear about a fire line being a mile wide
right,
as it's being cut. With fire lines, or let me step back, when a fire jumps a highway, that's got to be an attention-getting moment for everybody, that there's something, it's another step up. Is that oversimplification?
No, I think that's very valid, because you look at a highway, and when we cut a fire line, we want to get the vegetation down to mineral soil. So if you have a highway, it's already down the mineral soil, plus it's got concrete or pavement rather over it. So and then with the width of it, most of us look at a freeway and go, that's pretty darn big. If it's spotting over that and it's spreading over that, then that's something that definitely gets our attention, and that's where bulldozers are our biggest friend. Obviously, a fire crew can do a lot of work. If you've ever seen a good fire crew or even an inmate crew cut fire line, they can do a lot of work in a short amount of time. But nobody can compare it with a machine being able to do it, for sure.
Yeah, I would imagine Billy Gillespie's crew up the prison is going crazy right now up in Gasky helping folks out.
Right.
I mean, there's in situations like this, you really see where a lot of the resources are and what is available.
Right.
Creativity going on. Are you sending any of the troops out of the area, or are they all kind of hanging around in the region just in case?
Earlier in the fire season, we did send a crew down to the river fire in Monterey. They actually, you mentioned that the prison crews, the California Department of Corrections has a fire department, not made up of inmates, but they have actually firefighters that work for them. And they had a strike team, which is a strike team is five fire engines and a strike team leader. They had four Department of Corrections engines that needed a fifth engine to be able to make a strike team to go to Monterey. they called us, and we sent an engine with them. So we actually had our engine with a group of corrections crews.
Guys that could carry guns. That's not a bad combination. It's 8:30.
Hi, my name is Keith Lund. I am an electrician for Owsley Electric. You can go into a trade, be 18, become a trainee. They do require some education. You have 120 hours of classroom education, plus you have to work 2,000 hours a year. So after 4 years, then you can go out and work for another company, getting your own certificate, become your own boss. There's quite a few options you can do.
Own your future and learn more about the Trades Academy at hcoe.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill Reynolds, Assistant Fire Chief for Humboldt Bay Fire. Talk shop presented by CDH Painting, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, Murphy's Markets, Baywood Golf and Country Club, and Redec. Billy, looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, part of it, I suspect, is that we don't know the difference. Okay, we see different colored trucks, fine, dandy, okay. But in something like this, your department responsibility is different than CAL FIRE or CDF, and their responsibility is totally different than the firefighting crews from the Forest Service. You mentioned the CCC and some of the folks from the state prisons also. In an event like we're experiencing, or events like we're experiencing, where it's crossing these jurisdictional lines, I know the training comes into play, but is there greater efficiencies because you're getting all these different perspectives in, or is this just a manpower thing and throw as many bodies out there as possible?
There is a lot of advantage in the intermixing, because we and CAL FIRE are what you call all-risk fire departments. We train for all the risks. We go to structure fires, so does CAL FIRE. We go to medical aids. We go to rescues, hazmat. And because in today's fire service, we're a limited quantity. There's a lot of us out there, but again, that is like we're seeing that this time of year, resources are stretched thin. So we have to be cross-trained. We can't be just, you know, you see a lot of the old movies and whatnot. You have the firefighter; they sit around and all we do is go to fires. We, you know, in the black and white movie,
barbecue.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't forget the barbecue
and play cards and gin rummy and whatnot. And those days have long since passed. We have to be. Again, that all-risk philosophy of being able to go to everything. So, and we all bring something different to the table. Obviously, our specialty is obviously we're municipal firefighters, and we are kind of part-time vegetation firefighters. We don't do that all the time. Whereas CAL FIRE, their primary focus is on the, you know, protecting the forests and whatnot. So we all bring something different to the table. That's why you see a lot of times with our crews that go out there, we get assigned to jobs like structure protection. We go and we prep a structure. We're assigned to a house, a business, or whatever, and there's certain things we have to do to make it safe as the fire is coming towards us to be able to help effectively protect that structure. But
kind of like a subset.
Yeah.
Within the team, or I guess now we can use football analogies.
Right.
You might be special teams. You might be offense. You're not one of the guys that go both ways.
Right. Yeah. But we also, like right now, we have one of our fire engines, pardon me, our what's called a Type 3 fire engine, which is a shorter wheelbase, four-wheel drive, more set up for the rural environment. They're covering a CAL FIRE station. So right now they're assigned to CAL FIRE. They are a CAL FIRE resource. So they will use them just like one of their units to basically go to whatever they get dispatched to. They're in Weot, so they have a freeway section there they're covering. They're going to structure fires there. They showed into a structure fire yesterday in Fruitland Ridge. Not as a result of the wildland fires, but it was a fire caused by something else. And they were there with the local volunteer fire departments. Our guys were there as a CAL FIRE resource, but they were there in Fruitland Ridge putting a fire out. So we cover the gamut.
How challenging is it with the highways being closed? You know, like what with 199, okay, it's closed. Weot was closed. Are you guys able to kind of damn the torpedoes full speed ahead and you blast through those things? Or do you wait until it becomes safe for anybody to pass and then the race go through? I mean, how does emergency response or fire specifically react in that kind of a scenario?
As the fire department, we're able to go into areas that other people aren't, obviously. But the biggest thing is situational awareness. Our company officers on the engines and CHP, obviously, are there. and we have a good idea of what's going on ahead of time, and they can make a go no go decision to pay based on what's going on. You know the movies you see where guys
so you're
are,
like NASA.
Yeah,
the moon landing. Go no go.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
You know, and you know a lot of the stuff that we talk about. Some of the best training that we have, even in the fire service, on what we call situational awareness, comes from the airline industry, airline pilots, and knowing that you know what's going on with your airplane, what's going on around you, what's the weather doing. A lot of those lessons we extrapolate to our job and can apply. And so you know the movies you see where people are driving through the fire and stuff like that. That's not necessarily realistic. If you're seeing us do that, somebody messed up.
That's like panic mode.
Absolutely. So,
yeah, okay.
But our guys are you know well trained to say you know this is a safe way for us to get there, or do we need to find an alternate route?
So, with some of these elements that are in place, I know there's been a ton of cross training, so that the internal communications are as clear as they can be. Obviously, there are going to be cultural differences anyway. I can't imagine not having that done. It's got to make things so much smoother now that if you say left, everybody knows what direction left is.
Right. Yeah. And there were times in the very distant past in the fire service where jurisdictionally a fire department would go to another fire department and say, that's your side of the line. That's our side of the line. You stay on your side. We'll stay on ours.
Well, kind of like Harrison Avenue.
That's exactly the example I'm thinking of. Before consolidation, way back in the past, back in the 1950s, there was that conversation between two fire chiefs in our local community. Fortunately, that's all gone away, and we work together greatly now. But again, that was a big hindrance back then.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:41.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:45. We're back talking shop this morning with Bill Reynolds from Humble Bay Fire. Bill, 9/11 obviously takes on special connotations for, I would like to think, most of us.
Absolutely. If you're an American, you've got some feeling for that.
Yeah, but you think about it, you know, that's 19 years ago. If you're younger than 19, that's history, baby.
True
that's
enough.
Not what you experienced or what you lived through.
That's a good perspective.
And it's, yeah, it's a little sobering.
Yeah,
for a lot of us. Are you guys doing anything special? I know there's some activities going on the East Coast, but it's all, you know, the separation and the safe measures that
right.
are kind of being embraced everywhere. Are you guys doing anything similar or just flying the flags at half-mast kind of thing?
Yes and yes. That's one of the reasons why I'm here today. Chief Robertson, John Robertson, is participating in a 9/11 Memorial Stair Climb where I think it's our training tower. I'm not exactly sure which one he's at, but they do a stair climb, basically symbolizing the stairs of the firefighters who died that day climb to get to basically to go do their job. And not only that, but at the time that the first plane hit the tower, there's a moment of silence and an announcement from our dispatchers and everything, basically commemorating that moment.
Was it about 7:03 our time?
I think so. Yeah. And I remember that because I was on the fire department at the time. I was an engineer. Basically, and I was going on duty that morning. I typically don't listen to the news and stuff that morning. And I got up, and I remember looking at my watch going, 9/11, that's kind of a 9/11. That's a weird day to be going to work as a firefighter. And then driving to work, I heard the radio in my truck was turned down, but I heard something about the Pentagon, and I heard something about an attack. And I was thinking, well, there's something going on elsewhere in the world. And then I got to the fire station, and the crew was already up, and obviously the off-going crew, and they were watching TV. And normally when you come into the firehouse in the morning, people are like, hey, good morning, how you doing? And everybody was glued to the TV. They looked at me slowly, and they looked back and didn't say a word. And I was like, something's going on here. And that's when obviously I saw it was going on. So it's a pretty emotional day for a lot of us.
FDNY, Fire Department New York, is that what that is
yes.
short for? Okay. I mean, to me, there's a couple iconics.
Yes.
One is Giuliani wearing that hat, okay, and then obviously the president at the site later on, and the flag going up.
Yes.
Okay, those are there. Are there any images here to memorialize it? Do you guys have anything? I know you've got the memorial that you're working on for Old Town, but that's Eureka, not Chicago, not New York, not some of the other events that have happened. Right.
At our main station down at 533 C Street, Fire Station 1, our headquarters, there's actually a plaque on our wall in our entryway that memorializes the events of the day. And in the community at large, I'm not sure what else is out there. But again, as you walk into our facility, that's one of the first things you see is that commemoration of it. Because, like you said, it's 19 years ago, and I forget about that being so long ago, but... Gosh, that's something we've just
don't say so long ago, man.
I know.
Yeah, yesterday, yeah.
But we've got to remember that stuff because, again, that's such a large moment in history where the world changed. And we've just, if you forget that, then we're doomed to repeat stuff like that.
Yeah, the Alan Jackson song, I think, really summed it up. You know, where were you? Yeah.
Yes.
One of the things I know Kent Holbert and a bunch of folks are trying to do museum, you know, and bring some of that history back out of the closet and out in front for people to be able to review.
Right.
How's that going along? Is there traction going? Because Eureka does have history. Humboldt County does have history.
Right.
And a lot of folks don't have a clue.
Right. The Firefighter Memorial is progressing. The fundraising's happening. Obviously, with all this stuff with the pandemic, that's slowed things down to be able to have fundraisers and whatnot. Hopefully, when and if things get back to normal, we'll be able to get back to raising money for that to recognize the firefighters that have given their lives for our community. But also with, you mentioned Kent Holbert, when he's one of our historians, he's retired now. We have the old fire station on J Street where inside that building, not a lot of people know that, there's a lot of history. There's a couple old fire engines. There's history from both departments, the Eureka Fire Department and Humboldt Fire District. And they're always looking for funds. And there's a group locally, and you can look them up on social media called the Friends of Station 6. They're always trying to be out there, the big events, 4th of July festival and whatnot, and do fundraising. So
thanks for coming by, bud. It's a weird day. It's a weird time, but nice to see you.
Yeah, it's always great to be here.
See everybody tomorrow morning.